Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Property World. I'm Will Mellor, delighted to be joined by Peter George. Peter, great to have you on the show.
Hi, Will. Thanks for inviting me.
So we're going to be talking about doing business with local government from a property development and wider property sector perspective. So Peter, you might give the listeners a little bit of a flavour of what you're doing career-wise and why you're extremely well-placed to talk about this quite emotive subject.
No, thanks, Will. Yeah, so firstly, I've got now about 20 years experience of working in local government. In my current role, which I'm just finishing up at Enfield Council, I've managed different teams, including the planning department, housing development teams, the property department, as well as a major regeneration project called Meridian Water. But then in April, I'll be moving into a new role at Ealing Council, where I'll be their strategic director for economy and sustainability, where I'll be responsible for the entirety of their capital programmes, so getting homes, schools, leisure facilities all built, as well as managing the property, the planning department, climate change, economic regeneration, and a few other different service areas.
Okay, that's fantastic. And how did you get into it, Peter?
So I always knew I wanted to work in the public sector. My very first job was on the back of my degree. I was a researcher on a large regeneration project called Woodbury Down in North London, working for Hackney Council. I was lucky enough that they sponsored me to do a master's in urban regeneration at the Bartlett in UCL. And after 5 years working on that major kind of 5,000 home scheme with which is a partnership between Hackney Councils and Barclay Homes, I moved into the M4 Council. So really passionate about the sector, about working in local government, as well as kind of getting things built and delivered.
Right, and you mentioned a major project in Meridian Water. If people are aware of it, it's a £5 or £6 billion, and I don't throw the extra £1 billion around lightly. Development project in North London, which Peter's heavily involved with, but you're finishing up there and moving across to Ealing.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, very good. So we're going to start talking about how the private sector should approach and engage in order to do business with the public sector, and specifically local government, and in a property context. So as a high level, what would you say are the 3 to 5 points we should be covering?
So I think what would be good to talk about is how best to kind of engage with the public sector and different ways to access the public sector. Then I think it's good to kind of understand where there's an alignment of interest and values. I think, thirdly, it's good to talk about what's unique about your proposition. Then I think it's, let's talk about the local authority's routes to market, as well as how best to manage and maintain relationships.
Well, fantastic. Should we get cracking with how to approach a local government property department? How do you actually get access, and what are the common mistakes people make in that phase of it? Because you're not going to get very far if you're not talking to the right people.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think firstly, it depends upon the scenario. So, you know, there's two main scenarios are where you're an organisation that already has a land interest in the borough versus a company or organisation who doesn't have any property interest in the borough, but you've kind of highlighted that particular borough as one that you want to engage with. So I think where it's the former, then it's obviously more kind of straightforward, and really how you approach it to some degree has to have regard for the size of the plot of land that you've got. And, you know, in simple terms, the bigger the property interest you got in the borough, the higher your entry point to the organisation should be.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is a larger piece of land, then the council will consider that to be strategic. And then depending upon how the council operates, you may well start with a meeting at a political level, so either with the leader or the lead cabinet member, or you may start at a senior officer level. And you know, each council kind of handles what I will characterise as kind of new business inquiries slightly differently. And
what I think it might be handy just to give the listeners a little bit of a basic lay of the land in terms of understanding the dimensions of a council or the political makeup and you know, the difference between the political council and the officers and how it's typically structured. And it obviously varies, you know, depending on the size of the council and whether it's a unitary authority, etc. But as a general,
I'm obviously most familiar with the kind of the structure that operates where I'm working at the moment, so I'm comfortable explaining that. So in that particular council at Enfield, the council is run by elected councillors. In Enfield, for example, the Labour Party is the one that has the kind of controlling majority. So I guess the first point for the listeners to know is they always need to have a keen understanding as to the political makeup of the council, because the political makeup of the council can often provide some guide as to what their drivers are going to be. So it will be quite different between what a Labour council might be looking for and what a Conservative council might be looking for example. So at Enfield, in the same way that at national government, there's a cabinet and each cabinet minister holds a portfolio, the same is true with how many local government organisations are run. So at Enfield, there's a leader of the council, and which in Enfield is a woman, and she's has a cabinet, and each member of that cabinet, including the leader, will have their own portfolio. So for example, within Enfield, the leader has decided that she wants her portfolio to include regeneration and development side of things. In Enfield, there's a separate member covering property and finance and another member covering planning, for example. So that's the political makeup, and the councillors are really there to kind of set the overall kind of strategy and vision. So the councillors, when they win, when they've on the back of the election that they've won, they will have a manifesto, and that manifesto should to some degree translate or trickle down into the kind of the council plan or the corporate plan. So that kind of helps to explain the kind of how the kind of the political priorities then need to be translated into kind of practical deliverables. Then chief execs are the most senior person at a kind of a council officer perspective.
And the officers are the full-time employees.
So equivalent to civil servants in government. So they are the paid employees. But, you know, the senior posts are quite often political appointments. So, for example, the role that I've got now and the role that I've got moving into at Ealing, the panel was led by councillors, so they kind of lead on the senior appointments. And then there's a slightly difference. Enfield and Ealing have two different models, but they're pretty popular models in local government. So I'll briefly talk about them because they're pretty standard. So in Enfield, they've kind of currently got what's referred to as the People, Places and Resources Department. So resources at Enfield currently covers kind of finance, customer services and digital. People is all kind of adult social care, children's services, public health. And then place, that covers housing, planning and property. So if they've got that structure, it will be the place department that you'll be predominantly, or if not wholly, dealing with. Whereas Ealing has got six different strategic directors reporting into the chief exec. And my portfolio will be the one that will be responsible for dealing with private sector developer interests, because my new role covers the planning department and all kind of housing developments.
Very good. So but being aware of the structure and those director level roles. So if you see a director of place, typically there'll be assistant directors underneath and then principal officers at some point below that.
Yeah, that's right. So at Enfield, we've got directors sitting below the exec directors and heads of service sitting below them. At Ealing, you've got assistant directors sitting below strategic directors and heads of service below them. It's a similar kind of language, but though that kind of terminology is pretty standard in local government.
And in terms of your best advice, so when you've got that view of what the structure is, how do you actually use that in terms of making an approach and gaining access to get a little bit of a feel for what's going on and what the likely opportunity may be?
Yeah, so just going back to the scenario where you own land already, as I said, it depends upon the size of the plot of land. And if it's a strategic opportunity, then you should go in at a high level. At the kind of the political level or at that kind of exec director / director level. Quite often, the depending upon the size of the organization or size of the company, they might have a public relations company advising them on exactly who are the right people to contact, because it is, every council's got its slightly different in terms of whether it should be a political or senior officer introduction. If you're a larger company, you might want to seek that kind of PR advice on exactly who the right people are. LinkedIn can also be quite helpful in giving a bit of a view of
who's who and how they fit in.
Then the other scenario is where you're keen to work in a particular borough, you've targeted it, but you don't have any land yet. So, you know, some advice on this. Firstly, all councils must have what's referred to as a local plan, which is the most senior planning document. A lot of councils' local plans are out of date, and government, there's reforms going through government at the moment to try and kind of address that and speed that up. The local plan is a borough-wide planning document, and what that plan can do is allocate land for development. So I think, firstly, before any approach, you should have a sense of the planning policy context at that local level, understand where the growth opportunities in the borough are, what's the drivers within the council, and whereabouts they're allocating land. That's the first point. The second point is, and this will vary from council to council as to how good they are at it, but some councils will, and I think all councils should, keep some form of register as to land that's available, owned by the council. So there should, if you go on to, again, if you bear in mind that kind of structure that I just described earlier, that structure can also translate into how the council's website is organized. So you should be seeking out, you know, you should be keyword searching either kind of place department or housing department or property department or planning department. And you should be looking to find whether they're advertising any opportunities. So I think firstly, understanding the planning context. Secondly, understanding whether there's any opportunities coming up. But I think thirdly, you know, councils receive a lot of approaches and councils can become fatigued at the number of approaches that they receive. So they're going to be particularly open and particularly receptive to, and this is council officers I'm talking about in particular, there's a slightly different route if you want to access via politicians. But with council officers, if you're going to write to the relevant senior officer, and you can usually find them on the council's website or via LinkedIn, you need to be clear about what's unique about your proposition. Or put differently, do your research on the council, get an understanding of their strategic challenges, and then work out how you can solve their problems. So if for example, your research shows or the local plan shows that they've got a particular challenge with you know, extra care or senior living, and that's either your sole proposition or part of your proposition, then you need to be kind of, when you make your initial email into that senior officer, if you're going through an officer route, you need to be clear about how your company can solve that council problems.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like marketing 101, but so few people actually take that simple approach.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I would suggest goes into an introductory email or conversation is you need to give a sense that you're a serious and credible operator, because you know I've received approaches, and you do a little bit of digging, and there's nothing behind them. You know, you go on their website, or you run some checks, because SAC councils, you know, may well run some due diligence on you before they meet with you. And if it doesn't check out, if it doesn't look like you've got the money behind you that you say you do, then the whole thing could unravel quite quickly. So, you know, you've got to be upfront about, you know, where you are kind of financially, and you've got to demonstrate that ideally you've got a track record of delivery and you're a credible player.
Mm-hmm. And what would be the sorts of things that people would typically look for at a senior level within the council as demonstration of that?
So, I mean, firstly, looking forward to potentially working with an organisation, or if you approach me, I might receive the initial approach, say, I mean, but I'm not going to introduce you to anyone else if I don't think you're credible, because otherwise it is embarrassing to me. It's like, why, you know,
why are you wasting their time?
Well, why am I wasting my colleagues' time with a company that doesn't actually have any capability and capacity to deliver? So, you know, if you've got a website, the website needs to demonstrate clearly your track record. It needs to, where you've got experience of working with other councils, or you've worked in partnership elsewhere, where there's any testimonials, where you can be upfront about, you know, your financial backing, all of that gives the senior council officer a sense that this is a credible organisation, rather than, you know, something that's much more speculative, which you do get. Because, you know, for me to work with somebody that's really speculative, you know, that's, you know, given there's so many different players out there, unless your proposition's, you know, quite incredible, I'm not really going to want to take a risk on someone, or, you know, a smaller organisation, unless they can give me a bit of confidence that they can actually deliver.
And in terms of, you mentioned the values, and I suppose that's tying it back into the objectives that the council has. How do you tie that credibility into those values?
So, so it all depends upon, you know, the scale of the proposition. But if it's, we'll say if it's a smaller piece of land, then what the council, before any deal is executed, the council's finance team would typically carry out a due diligence process. You know, they would check, they would take the time to go through statement of accounts, for example. They might run a credit check. You know, they would look to see whether the turnover and the cash flow was sufficient to support the value of the proposition that you're putting forward.
And in terms of non-financial values?
So, In terms of non-financial values, then I think this is it's a good point to talk about, because in terms of successfully engaging with the public sector, this can vary politically, but a lot of councils are looking for more than a strong competitive financial offer, you know. So some of the other components that they're going to be looking for, dependent upon the council, so these could be lesser or greater important depending upon the kind of the political makeup. If it's a housing proposition, then the level of affordable housing is always of interest. Increasingly, councils are going to want to understand what the environmental sustainability credentials. And then thirdly, the councils is going to want to understand what's possible in terms of social value, you know, whether there's any local employment opportunities, apprenticeship opportunities, you know, what's going to be given back in section 106, whether it's, you know, if it's a mixed use development, then what's it going to provide? Is there any opportunity to have any on-site social infrastructure, such as a nursery or, you know, a health facility? Is there any opportunity for local amenities as part of your development? You know, for example, park or quality public realm. So I guess at least, so in summary, actually it comes back to, you know, that very kind of now familiar acronym within the industry, which is ESG.
Mm-hmm. And your one thing that's like apparent as a private sector person looking into local government is there's a different language, different buttons. Things are more or less important depending on which side of the fence you're on. Do you want to talk a little bit about how to talk the language of local government, specifically from a property and property development perspective, and how a private sector person can push buttons which generate a little bit of interest within the council, get a little bit of urgency going?
Yeah, okay. I think the first thing I will just say, which is your question has triggered this thought, but it's a slight digress, is it's worthwhile making this point in the kind of post-pandemic world. Do always push for a kind of a real life meeting. Yeah. You can't really build a relationship from scratch over a Teams or Zoom call.
And it's very difficult over email.
Very difficult over email. So, you know, my advice would be to always recommend that you at least ask for that. And insist that you go to their offices. Show effort and willing. Not all council officers will necessarily be receptive. You know, most council officers these days are kind of working 2 or 3 days a week in the office and the rest at home. But that, I think that's the first thing. In terms of kind of speaking the language, again, I would always start by an understanding of the political makeup of the council. So, you know, to talk very ideologically, stereotypically, certain conservative councils could well be more kind of financially driven whereas certain Labour councils might be a bit more affordable housing, social value driven. You know, that is a stereotype, but it is worthwhile differentiating. And I'm saying that even if you're talking to council officers, because, you know, the politicians, as I said, they set the overall agenda, and therefore those political priorities will trickle down into the officer tier, and they were therefore responsible for delivering those political priorities. So I will always say, start by understanding the political makeup, do your research, try to understand their drivers. And really, it's quite, you know, in some ways it's quite simple. If you do your research, all you're doing is playing back to them what they're saying to you in the public domain that they're wanting. You know, so every council should have some form of corporate or council plan that will set out their strategic priorities. You need to come in and explain, you know, how your proposition is going to align with that particular council's strategic priorities. You don't need to do it overtly, but if you can just, you know, if one of their strategic priorities is climate change, for example, as it is at Ealing, then of course the way you push the buttons is by explaining how your development is going to have high quality environmental sustainability standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just for one other is, councils are always interested in innovation. So where you've got something which is genuinely unique or hasn't really been done before, is not quite tested, not undermining the point I made earlier about, you know, track record and credibility, the councils are receptive to innovation, so long as you can back it up. So if you have got something which you think is genuinely unique, you need to be very clear that you believe that to be the case. Because a lot of councils are like the idea of kind of trailblazing or pioneering in a particular area.
Making a mark, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got something which you think is a bit special, don't be shy. You know, amplify that in your pitch.
And that I can see how that would apply very strongly at a political level, but I imagine also at an officer level, being able to point to something happening on your watch which is a bit special.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I think the other thing to think about when talking to politicians, the other bit of research I would recommend you do is, again, it's a very simple thing, but I bet very few do this. Work out what are the local newspapers in the area. They've normally got editions online. Go onto their website, look at the last half a dozen or so newspapers. It will take you 20 minutes. In my experience, those newspapers always talk about development. So that will give you a sense of the kind of the public perception of development in that borough. And quite often there'll be politicians will be quoted in those local newspapers talking about developments in their borough. Things that have gone well, things that are going badly. So in addition to kind of understanding the more local plan, my other advice is look at the local newspapers. If it give you a sense of what's going on, it might also give you a sense of what's going wrong, and you might have a solution to what's going wrong. You know, so for example, if you see that there's quite a few stories over the last few months about the council missing its housing targets, or projects moving slowly, and you've got a track record of speed of delivery, or your company's strong at modern methods of construction which can accelerate delivery, then actually you're stepping in. If you're meeting with the politicians, again, you don't say, I've read the article. Actually, you talk up the fact that your company can deliver at speed, because you will know, having read those papers, for example, that that council's, those politicians, are sick of the fact that developments in their boroughs is moving slowly. So that, again, there's another kind of bit of advice as to how you can, once you get to the kind of the initial conversation, you're well informed.
Okay, that's very astute. So in terms of, just let's drive into a little bit of detail around making your offer unique and how to stand out. What are some examples of good approaches that you've come across?
So I think good approaches are where they... I've received kind of cold emails, but or kind of connections on LinkedIn, and the ones where I've actually responded and organized a meeting are quite typically the ones where they got a unique proposition. Look, if you're a major, I'm really, a lot of what I'm saying is targeted at the kind of the small and medium size. You know, if you're a major company, then you're in a different place altogether. And, you know, most councils want relationship with major developers. So if you're in the major category, then just your sheer scale and kind of might get you in the door anyways. But on the basis that a lot of the listeners will be more at the kind of the smaller to medium end, then you're really, one of the ways you can impress is with a unique proposition. So recalling some examples, a big problem in many councils is the fact that they've got a really long waiting list for people wanting social housing. So if you've, I'm always interested in ideas that can kind of either help with the delivery of social housing or can help with the delivery of temporary accommodation properties. So that's one example of where, you might have a solution that helps with that problem. Then the other example that springs to mind is in relation to the kind of more niche kind of housing offers around senior living or extra care. Again, quite a lot of councils have a deficit of those housing tenures. If your company's doing something different in that space, then you need to be very clear with the council that what you can offer. And if you've already done some work with other councils, you should let the council know. It's an important point, actually, just to dwell on. If you've already done business with another council, that says to me, well, they probably went through some checks and balances. They probably did some due diligence on you. And if you managed to get yourself in the door of that council, then it's likely that you're a credible operator. So do brandish the fact that you've got experience working elsewhere in the public sector. It makes me think that you are a credible organization.
And in terms of what would be, just shifting gears a little bit, what would be some common ways that councils would sell land?
Yeah, so some of the main ways councils sell land are as follows. So I think the first thing to say is, it's very difficult for, even if the council wanted to do what I will call a direct deal, so i.e. working with a single company without any process or any competition, even if the council wanted to do that, it's difficult for the council to justify that that is the right thing to do. So I think just to step out for one moment, all kind of property transactions are governed by kind of an internal process. They all require approval depending upon the value. And quite often it's a politician or the cabinet that will be signing off on a proposition. So, you know, a direct deal is exceptional. So if you want the council to do something exceptional and get politicians to sign off on it, i.e. signing off on something exceptional means they're taking political risk. So there's got to be a massive prize for the council to take that kind of political risk. So firstly, it's challenging, unless you've got something, you know, fantastic, or if the council's a bit desperate, it's challenging to make a direct deal argument. So what I mean by an example of what desperate might look like is the council's got a site where a partner has gone bust and they're kind of middle of construction, or everything's kind of half moving along and then the company falls over. That's a scenario where they think, okay, you know, we need to just do a direct deal to keep things moving. So that's an example. The other example of where a council might do a direct deal is where you've already got an interest in the borough. So the classic example is, you know, it's a plot of land. Let's say you own half. Realistically, there's so-called marriage value. So you get more by working together rather than having two separate developments. Or you might even control the kind of access into the site. So where your property interest is adjacent to the council's property interest, then that's referred to as a special purchaser. So if you can demonstrate that you're a special purchaser, then the council can work directly with you. But again, it still requires governance and an approval process. So that's the kind of one way in. A second way in is where the council's selling land as a property transaction. So the council can either sell land as a property transaction, or it can sell land via a public procurement. So at a high level, the main difference between a property transaction and a procurement is a property transaction is typically where the council is disposing of land and putting very limited conditions onto the sale of that land. So, you know, for example, it might just invite use an agent to market a bit of land, invite bids. It might then do best and final, and it will be quite a simple, straightforward process. Might even just be single stage. Then you can become the preferred bidder within a matter of 2 or 3 months, go through governance, and then close out the contracts. So that's a property transaction, is a slightly more straightforward process. A public procurement, so it used to be governed by the EU, but following Brexit, It's now on the country, the UK government's responsibility. I think at the moment, all of the former rules from the EU have been lifted and shifted onto the UK statute, but they're currently looking to revise and review the procurement. I think that's going through government, going through Parliament. But what, where it's a procurement, there are different procurement techniques or processes depending upon the size and complexity of the land that's for sale. So, for example, the two main ones are a restricted procedure or competitive dialogue. And in simple terms, a restricted procedure will be a process that is just organised via an exchange of paper. So what I mean by that is the council will issue its tender document once it's sifted out, got from a long list down to a short list. Then you respond with your bid. Council evaluates against a range of criteria that will be financial, social value, and deliverability, and a couple of other factors, and it will evaluate and then make a decision. Competitive dialogue means you actually have a negotiation. They'll get down to, say, three bidders, and then you'll be negotiating with the council. And each of the three bids can be really quite different. The whole process, if it's a competitive, a restriction procedure could take 6 to 9 months. Competitive dialogue can take 1 or 2 years. So you only really do, council only really does that if it's like a high value, really large and complex scheme. But principally, it's direct deals, property disposals, and procurement. I guess the final thing to say in that property disposal category is if it's a really small piece of land, or if it's like a single property, the council does, and the property department that I currently manage does, sometimes just use auction houses. So it might, if it's a really small bit of land, or like I said, it's just a couple of properties, they might just dispose of it via an auction house or like a local state agent.
And in terms of what would be the volume of transactions that are over your time at Enfield typically would go through in a year?
So again, it varies on scale. So I think for 23-24, Enfield is going to try and sell, in terms of our disposal program, something around about 8 to 10 plots. So these will vary in scale, but typically those plots on that disposal program will have values either in the hundreds of thousands or in the low millions. So that's what Enfield's program's looking like. But in addition to that, the council will also be working on somewhere between 2 to 4 estate regeneration projects. So the demolition rebuild of council estates. And they might also be working on the redevelopment of a town centre or a much larger regeneration project. So, but those larger projects are typically, the appointments will be via procurement. And actually, just on the procurement, sometimes councils also use frameworks rather than open processes. So they might go to, you know, like the GLA has a framework of developers, for example, so it might use a framework instead.
You might just briefly explain what a framework is for people unfamiliar.
Yeah, sure. So a framework is where an organisation, so let's take the example in London, where we've got the Greater London Authority, the GLA. They have frameworks. So a framework is where, let's take a developer framework, for example, where that organisation has run a procurement to appoint a number of different providers on a kind of a preferred list or a framework. So what the organization might do is it might split the framework into different categories. So it might say, I want a category for small builders, category for medium size, a category for large ones. And that organization, so in this example, the GLA, they were the first done all of the vetting for you. So the first stage in any procurement after the kind of the notice is a so-called pre-qualification questionnaire. That's all of the financial and capability due diligence. So they do that all for you. And they might also have got, like I think the GLA do, then also issue a standard development agreement or development contract that the bidders have to sign up to. So then when I come to, and then they make it publicly available across the whole of London. So I've actually procured using that framework. I thought, rather than do an open process, why don't I just use that GLA framework? Because it can speed things up for me. Because they've already done some of the vetting for me and they've already got them signed up to the contract. I would, let's say they've got six major developers on their major developer category. I then have to invite all of those six major developers to express an interest. Let's say four are interested. I then ask them to bid on, I then issue those four my tender documents and ask them to bid. So it speeds the whole thing up.
And that leads us into another area of, I suppose, managing and maintaining relationships. So
yeah.
Getting in the door is one thing. Getting, I suppose, an ongoing, meaningful, mutually beneficial relationship where there's ideally more deals happening and a cordial relationship. What are the key tips in that regard?
So I think the first thing is you're only as good as your last scheme. So if you've been in, if you're the other side of a property deal and you've actually got something on site or partially or wholly completed, you're only as good as that scheme as in terms of how well it's gone. What do I mean by kind of how well it's gone, actually? Because that can be misinterpreted. Did you deliver on time to a pre-agreed program? Because, you know, if the politicians stood up and said, this development's going to be delivered in this month, and then you're late, you've embarrassed a politician. They might get criticised by other politicians because your development's late. So you've already kind of lost some points with them. So firstly, have you delivered on programme? Depending upon the nature of the financial deal, if you've gone back knocking on the council's door asking for more money, that doesn't play out well. Thirdly, how did you engage with the planning process? Were you able to strike up a good rapport with the planners? Were you able to get it through the planning committee? How did you manage the relationship with the planning committee members? And then finally, yes, you delivered a block of homes, but did you appoint any local subcontractors? What did you do on kind of engaging local schools? Was there anything you can talk about in terms of apprenticeships? if you can tick all of those boxes, well, the more boxes you can tick, the more likely the council's going to want to do business with you again. So if you're good on the cash, good on delivery, obviously quality's got to look good, and you've got something to talk about in terms of kind of social value and or environmental sustainability, if you're ticking some of all of those boxes, then the council's going to be feeling really good, positive towards you. So firstly, you've got, it's about your track record. Secondly, do take the time to show the councillors around. You know, do make sure you're good at press. You know, make sure you're showing the councillors and the senior officers around the development. Wheel out your senior people. So make sure that the senior people of your organisation have got a relationship with the senior people at the council. You know, so for example, again, it depends upon the nature of the individuals. But if the company's fielding somebody who's kind of a bit mid-tier level, and then you're trying to get, you're wanting the relationship with the chief exec, well, the chief exec might be thinking, well, you know, is your chief exec too busy to pick up the phone and talk to me or come and see me? So do think about getting people of corresponding seniority engaging with the people that correspond with the seniority of people in the council. Because that will make the council feel that the company's taking the relationship seriously because they're fielding their top people. A good example is very tragically now no longer with us, Tony Pidgley of Barclay Homes. You know, he was the master at the kind of the relationships with local government. Even though he was chairman of one of the biggest house builders in the country, the amount of times he came into this council, you know, he would meet with the chief exec, he would meet with the leader of the council, and the chairman of one of the biggest companies, he took the time to foster those relationships. So do make sure you've got the right seniority. Some developers also kind of strengthen the relationship through kind of socials. So, whether it's, a lunch, a dinner, a football match, whatever, council's officers do have to fill out a gift and hospitality form, and it all has to be on the public record. So if the council says no, it might just be because they're worried about perceptions. So I think you've got to take a view on it, and it depends on the council, but that kind of hospitality can help to kind of...
So choosing whether it's a ticket to an Arsenal game or a Tottenham game is not insignificant.
Well, yeah. But also what the council has to think about is, it perversely could backfire, because if it's on the public record that council officers or councillors have accepted quite a bit of hospitality from your company, then you come to do another deal, the opposition members, because most councils and not a single party controls it, there will be opposition councillors, they will quite rightly go, well, hold on a second, this looks a bit dodgy. You know, so this same company who you've been to lunch with, you've been to dinner with, you went to the races the other day, and now I find out you're selling them land. That looks, and it's a direct deal, that looks dodgy. So, you've got to kind of understand whether or not that's actually going to play out in your favour or not.
Well, one thing that, and it's probably my perception is this is more more the case in areas where there's a large number of councils within a small geographic area, such as London. There's a relatively high or short tenure on average, particularly in planning departments, where who you're dealing with changes in the middle of a deal, middle of a process. What would be your advice for managing that from the private sector side of things?
No, it's a really good point. So I think the first, I think the context here is there's a national shortage of town planners in the country, particularly within local government. So because there's a national shortage, then supply and demand dynamics mean that where you are a good planner, your services are in high demand. That leads to quite a lot of churn or turnover. And within a council planning department, some councils rely upon agency workers rather than permanent workers. And where you've got more agency, you're more likely to get churn and people move along quickly. So I guess the first thing to say is, you know, don't be tight on the planning fee. You know, you're more likely to get a better service if you enter into a pre-planning agreement with the local planning authority, and if you engage with the design review panel. So that's the first point. I think secondly, always try to establish a couple of tiers above the case officer you're dealing with. So if you're dealing with the planning case officer, it's always good to know who their boss is and who their boss is. So again, stepping down into structure, it might be that the planning case officer is manager is a team leader or a head of service, and then there might be a head of planning, and there might be a director of planning. So it depends upon the council, but do have an understanding. And again, depending upon the scale, you know, if it's a large, if it's a larger development, in the initial meetings, particularly if you're paying good fees, you should be asking to have, you know, one of the introductory relationship meetings with not just the case officer, but at least one person more kind of senior or so, so that the chances are that if you've got a relationship with two or three tiers of that planning department, at least one or hopefully two of them will be there for
the duration. We'll still be there for the duration of the job.
Yeah. So, at least So that's my advice on how to handle that situation. And then, because the other thing that can happen is, you know, there can be, you know, the handover or the transition might not be smooth. It's just, you know, so if you've got a relationship with the more senior person, at least you can say to them, you know, please, can you give this your attention and intervene? Because it was going swimmingly with, you know, the first person, the second person, that they've got, clearly they've got too big a caseload, a bit distracted. You know, don't blame the planners, because a lot of them will have too much work on, but it's just moving, it's not moving in accordance with the timetable we agreed. Please can you kind of intervene and provide them with some support to get this moving? But you do have to be quite persistent with certain planning departments, because not all of them are as responsive as the private sector would want them to be.
Okay, well, that's fantastic, Peter. I might just ask you to give a quick summation, you know, and the, you know, the 3 to 5 key points that you'd emphasise for someone looking to do business with the with their local government on a property level?
So I think just to finish up then, firstly, on something that I haven't spoken about is where you have or your company has local connections with that borough always plays out well. So if it's your local council, if you grew up in that borough or you're living in that borough or your company's based in that borough, you need to be talking about that because you're local, you've got local connections. And a lot of councils look to for favour or support local organisations. So firstly, play up the local connections where they exist. Secondly, understand the political makeup, understand the corporate priorities of that organisation, play that back to them in terms of the language that you're using. So, you know, push their buttons. I would say, thirdly, do your research on who the key players are within the council. Like I said, the website, LinkedIn, or a public affairs company are the three obvious ones, or use kind of contacts that you've got in the industry. So you know people that know that council, pick the phone up to that person and say, in reality, who are the people that are really driving things forward in this council? Who should I be talking to? Then I think the next point is be clear about your proposition and be honest about what you can do and what you can't do. So councils are not looking and can sniff blaggers from a distance. So don't try and come in and think you can bluff it. More often than not, you'll fail. So be honest about your track record, honest about what you can do, honest about what's not achievable, what's not deliverable. That will just add to your credibility. And then finally, it's all about kind of having delivering upon what you say you're going to do. So make sure that what you're setting out is actually deliverable and achievable, because you might not realize, but those promises, those commitments, you might have multiple councillors talking about that in a public arena, and you don't want to let them down and disappoint them because they're not going to be feeling positive towards you.
Okay, that's a fantastic outline about doing business with local government. Peter George, you can connect with him on LinkedIn. And Peter, just in closing, well done on a great career in Enfield Council, and best of luck with the Ealing venture. Any thoughts as to what we might look forward to in Ealing?
Yeah, so I think with Ealing, that council's already got a really good track record of kind of delivering homes and delivering affordable homes. So I think, I'm expecting there to be quite a few opportunities around housing developments. Part of the Ealing borough includes the Old Oak Common, which is the biggest regeneration project, I think, in the country. So there's a major growth opportunity there, but there's also a large amount of industrial space in Ealing. You know, we've been predominantly focused on residential, but there's some really big kind of commercial opportunities in Ealing to potentially kind of grow and modernize their kind of industrial estate to kind of increase the number of jobs in the borough.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to follow that with interest. Peter George, I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property World podcast, and we'll get you on again next time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Will.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.